words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Please have a seat. The black oaks fling their bronze fruit into all the pockets of the earth. Puck, puck, they knock against the thresholds, the roof, the sidewalk, fill the eaves. The bottom line of the old gold song of the almost finished year. What is spring, all that tender green stuff, compared to this falling of tiny oak trees out of the oak trees? And then the clouds gathering thick along the west, then advancing, then closing over, breaking open the silence. And the rain dashing its silver seeds against the house. It's a poem that felt appropriate for today. It's called Fall. It's from the pen of Mary Oliver, a name known to some of you. And if you know her, you'll know that she was America's nature poet in our time, the poet of wonder. She said of herself in a later poem, "When it's over, I want to say, all my life, I was a bride married to amazement." And she was all her long life, until death did her part with the world that so amazed her on January 17th of this year. But for most of her life, you would have found Mary outside at 5 a.m. with her pencil and her notebook, wandering the forests and the shores of the little Seraph Curl, the tip of like a capital G that is Provincetown, Massachusetts, in the Bay of Cape Cod. Day after day after day after day, Mary would rise and go simply in order to stop. Just stop and see and listen and witness the oaks and the river and the egrets, the grasshopper, the wild geese overhead. Day after day after day, she would put words to the page and fill pages upon pages with hundreds and hundreds of poems, all of them only ever saying one thing. Wow. Wow. Anne Lamott says that poetry is the official callous language. Poetry is one of those things that comes out of a place of wonder, especially nature poetry. And we have been in the season of creation over these last weeks here. And we have asked the question over and over again, in light of the world as it is, how then shall we live? Everything else we've tried, have we tried wonder yet? Or maybe that voice is in the back of your head too that says, really? Wonder now? How could that matter? Wonder seems like a bit of a luxury when the glaciers are melting, the seas are creeping, the forests are sparking, and the life of our cities are killing the life of the world. Seems like a bit of a luxury when our survival, and not ours alone, feels more precarious than it maybe ever has. Who has time for wonder and poetry when everything is going wrong? The answer appears to be the one who speaks from the whirlwind in the book of Job. You should take the next 2 years of your life and drop everything and learn Hebrew just so you can read the book of Job, by the way. This is the masterpiece of ancient Hebrew poetry, start to finish. And the excerpts that we had read for us by Karen today come at the very end of the book. Maybe you know the story. There is a man named Job who lived somewhere back in the mists of prehistory in a land called Uz, and he is a good man who has it all like a good person should, until it's ripped away from him in spite of the fact that he's good. And he's left with nothing. On one day, a messenger comes to him and says, all of your kids, as you know, were in a house feasting, all 10 of your children and their families. And a violent storm broke against the house and tore the house apart. And that storm, that whirlwind, tore those lives, those loves away from Job. And he is a broken and shattered man when we meet him. Till he finds his voice and the breaking continues. He opens his first poem in Job chapter 3 with a death wish, begging the hand of heaven to leaf back to the day of his birth, to wet its fingers and to snuff that day out. Not even just to kill him now, because that wouldn't be enough. If it was going to be this bad, it would be better never to have been. And he rages and he whirls, caught in the agony of whirlwind. His friends help not at all. Finally, Job comes to an end, and just at the moment that he falls silent, having no more wise and where the hell are you gods to say, out of the whirlwind, a voice speaks. But what it says is so surprising. If this is the great and good physician showing up in the hospital to visit this poor, afflicted person, it has a very strange idea of what counts as a bedside manner. Who is this who darkens counsel with words without understanding? Gird your loins and get ready for a fight. But then from that question, that opening challenge, the voice launches out. The voice launches out into this cavalcade of images. Were you there when the light was birthed? Do you know where the storehouses of the halo are? Have you measured time and space? Really, the voice conjures in its own poetry the entire circle of banners behind me, leading Job stage by stage through all the wild and sundry creatures that are the world. Have you seen this? Have you seen the sea monsters? Have you seen the birds of prey red in claw? Have you seen the deer calving in the quiet of the forest? And actually, the poem goes on further than where we saw it stop. Job says, I've had enough. And the voice keeps going as if it's really on a roll now. And as if it is caught up. As if the divine speaker is himself caught up, wonder drunk on the panorama of the world and all of its beauty and violence intermingled. And then Job, for whom everything has gone wrong, stands before this Lord of Sorrow with nothing on his lips. Except that for a reason that it's actually still hard to put our fingers on, his eyes and ears are so full of what he's seen and heard that the shattered bits of his heart hum with wow. Which shouldn't matter. And yet does, even though that voice is conveniently not answered. answered a single question he asked. Because it turns out that the peace of the Lord, who passes all understanding, is the peace of wild things. And if we would have imagined that wonder is the province of human beings before the enormity of the world, we find out, as we so often do in the scriptures, that that's flipped on its head, and it turns out that wonder is God's game first, which he invites us into. Even at our lowest and bleakest points. But who would have imagined that? And the answer there seems to be this Jesus fellow. Because when we pick up our gospel reading, we find Jesus urging his disciples to put first of all in their lives God's kingdom and righteousness. That is to say, that they need to devote themselves utterly to God's work to reconcile this broken world. And therefore, Jesus says, consider the lilies. Consider the birds of the air. But consider the disciples for a second. These aren't a bunch of, upper middle class hippie or hipster wannabes who actually live relatively comfortable lives, have deep pockets, a deep freeze, a closet full of clothes. These are a bunch of Galilean peasants who have left all to follow this itinerant rabbi with the clothes on their back, and they live in a time of subsistence agriculture. They live hand to mouth, day to day, for the most part. So for these people, the question, what then shall we eat? What are we going to drink? What are we going to wear? Is a real and pressing question. As maybe they are starting to become real and pressing questions for us. As food security is threatened. As we wonder about drinkable water. As we think about fashion and our unsustainable economy. What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? What are we going to wear? Feel the worry not in them, not in us. And yet to these people, Jesus says, would you get a load of that bird? Or consider not even just the disciples, but Jesus himself, who is facing down certain death on the way to Jerusalem, to the cross, and who stops anyways, apparently, to smell the flowers. Or is that the wrong way around? Is it because Jesus has stopped and seen and listened and witnessed the care of God for the flower that is clothed after the death of winter? Is it because Jesus has beheld that, that he is able to walk the lonely road to Jerusalem and pour out his very life into the hands of that same God and gamble on the reconciliation of all things? So this, I think, is the big surprise this morning, and maybe on the far end of the season of creation. God's invitation to wonder does not come as a luxury once we've sorted things out. It comes when the world feels precarious. To Job, to the disciples, to Jesus himself, and to us. And what we hear today twice over is the exact same divine wordsmith who drags us outside of ourselves and our worries, legitimate as they are, to behold the serene constellations in their orbits. To look at the geese and the egrets. To look at the monsters in the deep. To consider the weather and the wildflowers. In order to shock us in into the wonder and wow that is God's home. And that we can find ourselves small and ephemeral and fragile, yes, but knowing our place in what Mary Oliver called the family of things. All of us together under the care of the God that Jesus called Abba. Maybe it starts with wonder. And if we read each of these stories past where we see them, we have cause to maybe go there. So Mary Oliver goes on in her life to find her faith put back together, herself put back together by practicing wonder after growing up in a broken home. Job, impossibly, finds himself limping and befuddled, living a life of unparalleled generosity and becoming a force for reconciliation in his community. The disciples end up crisscrossing the Mediterranean world, shouting to anyone who will hear the good news of God's reconciling work in all things. And Jesus himself, the poet in the whirlwind, lets himself be taken away by the world. He weds himself by birth to the violence and beauty of this world as it is, in order from within it to spend all of himself for the reconciliation of all.